You are now listening to a Porsche FM podcast.
Catch the Saturday Fix every morning, 7 till 9 a.m. with myself, the queen of the airwaves, Lebogang Tema, right here on Boord FM. Your Kasi, your Stasi. If you've just joined us, you're right on time for my interview with Dr. Khan, and we'll be talking all things postnatal depression, which in lame terms is depression that occurs after you give birth. He's already in studio with us and is ready. You know, if you have any question for us, you can just, you're welcome to send us your WhatsApp. You're welcome to send us the questions on WhatsApp. And the line is 0641196071. Okay, so I do recognize that PDP is a very sensitive subject for a lot of mothers, whether new or not, and that there is no one-trick pony in terms of how, you know, different people are affected by it. So my first question to Dr. Khan would be, like, from a perspective of a doctor, what would you say postnatal depression is?
Good morning to Boord FM listeners, viewers. Good to be with you. Quite a complex topic, but in simple terms, postnatal depression is depression that occurs after childbirth, and that would be usually within the first 2 to 3 days after childbirth, but can essentially happen within the first year of childbirth. Now, postnatal depression is really a spectrum of disease.
Okay.
So what I mean by that is you can get postpartum blues, which is really mild symptoms which start from the first to the third day and usually only last up to 2 weeks. And those symptoms would involve crying a lot, feeling down, feeling sad, a bit anxious as well. But, you know, they resolve within those first 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And then if the symptoms persist for longer than 2 weeks and certainly become more intense,
yeah,
that then becomes or is diagnosed as postnatal depression. And postnatal depression involves anhedonia, which is a feeling that you have no zest for life. There's no reason for you to get up.
Yeah.
You you know, you don't want to care for yourself. You don't want to care for the baby. There is lack of sleep or too much sleep. There is a lack of appetite or comfort eating, which is excessive appetite. Difficulty or inability to concentrate, and you know, these symptoms then require treatment. You obviously require medical assistance, and you obviously need a lot of social support and support with the baby, because the risk with postnatal depression is once you start having suicidal ideation, meaning suicidal thoughts, you know, there is a risk for you harming yourself and possibly harming your baby. The worst end of the spectrum is postpartum psychosis. And postpartum psychosis is quite rare, but it does happen, where the mom goes into a very deep depression where they start having hallucinations, where they start seeing and hearing things that aren't there, hearing a commentary, you know, in the back of their minds. They become delusional, disorientated, and they require obviously intense psychotherapy.
Yeah.
And often those are the people that think of harming themselves and harming their babies.
Okay, so normally mothers would then, like, you know, get the symptoms 2 weeks, like you said, of the first week of childbirth. And then if those symptoms continue, then they obviously have to go see a professional.
And that's when you would need to seek professional help, yes.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, my second question was going to be, what are the symptoms? But you've already covered that. And then now that we know what postnatal depression is and, you know, all the layers to it, because you did get in depth, I wanted to ask you, that I know a lot of women, you know, are diagnosed earlier and others can get it on, get on with treatment faster, and that there's, I wanted to know, are there disadvantages or advantages to being diagnosed earlier, or advantages of being diagnosed earlier and disadvantages of being diagnosed later on?
Okay, well, the earlier you diagnose, the better it is. You know, as explained previously,
yeah.
If you allow those symptoms to linger and become more intense, mm-hmm. obviously, higher risk for mom and for baby. Yes. So, it obviously requires a high index of suspicion, but if you see a family member or someone who's just given birth, neighbor, friend, who seems to be down,
mm-hmm.
exceptionally so, more than they usually are, mood swings, crying a lot, you know, that's when those red flags should start coming up, where you should start probing and, you know, checking the patient's behavior and asking them questions. And if you find that the person isn't doing well, mm-hmm. they definitely need to seek medical attention. There is medication that we can give to the patient. But even before we start medication, you know, counseling is usually the way to go.
Okay. Do you think that there's people who are more likely to getting postnatal depression than others? And if you are one of those people, how would you likely know that I am like prone to getting postnatal depression after giving birth?
Yes, that's actually a very good question, Lebo. You definitely are more prone to getting postnatal depression,
mm-hmm.
Due to a certain set of circumstances. One is heredity, meaning genetic. You have bipolar mood disorder in your family. You've suffered from major depression, or there's major depression in your family. And indeed, you've possibly had postnatal depression in a previous pregnancy. In fact, the incidence of having postnatal depression in a second pregnancy is up to 50% after having it in your first pregnancy.
Okay.
Okay. And then there are various social factors, abuse.
Mm-hmm.
You've had a difficult pregnancy. You've been physically abused, emotionally abused.
Yeah.
Domestic violence, you know, GBV is obviously something that is at the forefront now, especially with Women's Month.
Yes.
So things like that, where there's additional stress when you're during the pregnancy, will definitely contribute to the possibility of developing depression.
Okay.
Then, of course, there are factors like self-doubt. Will I be a good mom? It's quite daunting to have a baby. It's no longer a toy. It's an actual baby with you. You're not playing with a doll anymore.
But, mm-hmm.
So there are issues of self-doubt, anxiety, which could lead to depression. And, of course, a lack of support.
Okay.
Let's say you are from another area and you're alone.
Yeah.
There's no
family.
No family, no friends. Because usually when you give birth, there's family around you. Mom comes to help, or you go to mom. Those kind of things. And, you know, if there's a lack of support and you feel alone and, you know, almost a sense of worthlessness,
mm-hmm.
sometimes even guilt, that can definitely push you into depression.
Okay. Do you think that there are steps that women can take during pregnancy to mitigate the chances of getting postnatal?
Not really. What, you know, poor listeners need to understand, and women at large, is that developing postnatal depression is not a character flaw. It's not a weakness.
Okay.
It's something that you have no control over.
Yeah.
You know, due to a certain set of circumstances, it can and may develop in anyone.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. What the other question I wanted to ask you is, what factors do you think contributes to mothers having PDP? And could it be that PTSD from labor also does contribute to having postnatal depression outside of the other ones that you have mentioned, which is lack of support, feeling alone, feeling worthless, and having had a difficult pregnancy?
Yes, post-traumatic stress from the birth itself, a difficult pregnancy,
mm-hmm.
A difficult birth process where you needed an assisted labor, meaning they used forceps or, you know, needed to use suction, will definitely contribute to development of postnatal depression after birth, yes.
Okay, so if I'm feeling these negative feelings, let's say 2 weeks or 3 weeks after I've given birth, how do I go about seeking professional help? You know, without, because like you said, a lot of moms would then feel guilty, and there's shame that comes with experiencing these negative feelings.
Correct.
About yourself and towards your child. So how do you go about seeking professional help?
Well, your first port of call would be your primary health care provider, your local general practitioner in your area,
mm-hmm.
who would assess you and initiate treatment, or if deemed necessary, would refer you to a clinical psychologist or indeed even a psychiatrist,
mm-hmm.
if it was found that your symptoms are of a severity where you're becoming a risk to yourself and a risk to the baby.
Yeah. Okay. So if I'm a new mom and, well, I'm not taking too much, I'm not thinking like these negative thoughts could be probably postnatal depression, but the people around me are worried that it's not normal and I'm not myself. How can they help me, you know, without, I don't know, imposing or anything like that, for lack of a better term?
Yes, I could think that a new mom would be apprehensive to see a doctor if they're not convinced that they have some kind of issue.
Mm-hmm.
But counseling groups, you know, you have various group therapies. You have a hotline.
Yeah.
You know, we have a few of them in SA that you could call to speak to a trained counselor who would mm-hmm. then guide you in that regard and possibly, you know, investigate your circumstances and ask you a few questions around how you're feeling.
Yeah.
And obviously would guide you as to whether you would need to seek professional help or not.
Okay. And then if once the mom is diagnosed and they are on medication, will they be able to breastfeed? Because I know...
Yes. Well, there are obviously certain medications which we at doctors would advise. In the case of breastfeeding moms requiring antidepressants, we would put them on medication called SSRIs, which are selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. Of those, paroxetine. Yeah, that's a tongue twister.
Jeez.
Paroxetine and sertraline are probably the safest drugs because the excretion in breast milk is really minimal.
Okay.
Which obviously that's important because you don't want a lot of that to get to the baby.
Okay. And then is it common for moms to get side effects, you know, feel sick because they're taking antidepressants or whatever medicine that has been prescribed to them?
100%.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, all medication has some sort of side effect. And with the SSRIs, the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, we see symptoms like a dry mouth, weight gain, sexual dysfunction. So there are side effects with pretty much any medication mm-hmm. that you take. Those obviously need to be addressed with your doctor. And if the medication dosage needs to be lowered or titrated down or changed, you know, the treating doctor would obviously do that for you.
Okay. How long does it take for PPD? PDP is what we use for COVID. For PPD to end, once I've been diagnosed and on medication, how long would it take for me to get to my normal self and start embracing my new journey as a mom and, you know, my baby?
Yes. It's obviously very individualized depending on how you respond to treatment, depending on your support structure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you have a lot of support around you, people that will give you a break, take the baby from you for a while, you know, allow you some space and some time to rest.
Yeah.
And, you know, respond to the medication well, then it usually takes a few weeks for you to start improving. Once you start on antidepressants, by the third week, fourth week, you already start feeling significantly better.
Okay, if you don't get professional help, né, and then you just go on like that on autopilot and hoping that it will end by itself at some point, does it end by itself at some point? And the reason I'm asking you this is I saw this other post on social media where you know, some influencer was asking this question and a lot of moms were saying that they experienced it, but they didn't know at the time that it was it. And now the child is like 13, 19, a few years older, and they still have these negative feelings towards that kid. So is that normal? And is it because their postnatal depression wasn't treated, or is it ill feelings towards the father of the child or whatever situation the child was born in?
It's actually a mixture of pretty much everything that you've said, yes. So, you know, I'm sure this will resonate with a lot of moms, you know, that are tuned in and are listening to the show,
mm-hmm.
is that you would probably think, ah, no, I definitely had some of those symptoms. You know, I was crying a lot.
Yeah.
I felt down. I felt moody.
Mm-hmm.
And those are usually postpartum blues, which is can occur in up to 50% of pregnancies, especially in those first 2 to 3 weeks after having given birth.
Mm-hmm.
But untreated, depending on your psyche and how strong you are, some people, as their circumstances improve, usually climb out of the depression.
Mm-hmm.
For some people, it unfortunately does linger, especially if their set of circumstances does not improve. There are this continuous domestic violence, there's continuous emotional, physical abuse, lack of support.
Yeah.
They can carry that for years with them. And like you correctly say, even when the child is 13 years old, even an adult, mm-hmm. there may still be a little bit of resentment towards the child. And, you know, the risk with postnatal depression is that it can lead to major depression later on.
Yeah.
So then you have to treat depression. So it's no longer just postnatal depression, but actually major depressive disorder.
Hectic. Geez, this is like it's a lot. Okay, when all of that happens and the mom has this resentment towards the child, is this particular child also then prone to then getting postnatal depression or some form of depression as a result thereof? Since you said it's also genetic, yes. Yeah.
Yes, that is unfortunately true. Heredity, meaning, you know, passing on symptoms or diseases like depression, bipolar mode disorder, does happen.
Yeah.
And also the lack of a bond between mother and child
mm-hmm.
may also lead to the child suffering with psychiatric illnesses later.
Some form of mental
depression.
Yes. Illness.
Yes.
Okay. Just out of interest, do men also get something like this after having kids?
Yes. Men can also suffer from postnatal depression. I usually advise, you know, the men that come to see me who accompany their wives, that during the birth process, they should stay on the top part of the delivery, holding mom's hand and kissing her cheek instead of being at the bottom, where you actually see the whole birth process, because it's very daunting to actually see a lot of that. The blood, the baby. So it's a lot for
okay,
guys.
So that can contribute to them now feeling.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, interesting. I didn't think of it that way. I just thought of it like from an emotional.
That's the physical aspect. There's also an emotional aspect where you're a new father. Suddenly you have all this responsibility, and it can be overwhelming for a lot of men as well. We tend to focus on females. We tend to focus on mom and you know, her psychological well-being, forgetting that the dads can very much be affected and afflicted in the same way.
Okay, I have a few questions from our listeners.
Great.
And some of the questions I had you touched on as we went along in the interview. So my first question is it a difficult thing to diagnose, especially since patients are not forthcoming? And what are the signs to look out for if they are not forthcoming? And would it be easy for a doctor to pick it up?
Well, as a doctor, you need to have a high index of suspicion. I think it's easier when you know the patient.
Yeah.
When the patient's been to you before and, you know, you have a history with the patient and suddenly they come back after childbirth and now the patient seems to be down, seems to be depressed, not her usual self, you know, that's when we start probing.
Yeah.
As doctors and start asking questions, you know, how are you doing? How's the baby? How are you feeling? You know, are you eating? Are you sleep? Are you getting enough sleep? And when you start probing and you get answers that are suggestive of depression, you obviously then need to speak to the patient, whereby you either initiate treatment if deemed necessary, or you refer the patient for counseling.
So in a case where, like, the patient is reluctant to taking treatment and all the medication that might come with the treatment, how would you then go about treating it without medication?
Well, treatment is usually initiated with counseling first, even before we start medication. So we have something called CBT, Cognitive Behavior Therapy, where we, you know, we teach you how to deal with the situation. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we have interpersonal therapy where we look at your bond with your family and with the baby. And it's a counseling session that they can either be done individually or it can be done in groups.
Okay.
You know, some people identify better with group therapy because I thought I was the only one suffering with this. And now I realize that there are other people who suffer from the same thing.
Then there's like some camaraderie around it. Okay.
Exactly. And you already start feeling better because you realize that you're not alone.
Yeah. Situation. Yeah. When I actually spoke to like a few moms, I did realize that a lot of women don't like sharing their experience about postnatal depression because either they think they are alone or, like I said, there's shame and guilt that is associated with it. And I feel like, I mean, they shouldn't be because this is something that we go through
as young mothers, yes.
Yeah. The other question that was asked is, what are the dangers that this condition might pose to the newborn child should the mother be in denial? I think you did touch on this, if they start hallucinating and they could pose a harm.
If you develop postpartum psychosis,
yeah.
I mean, the mom and, you know, they start having suicidal thoughts, suicidal ideation. There are also sometimes thoughts of harming the baby. In fact, there are attempts at harming the baby.
Mm.
So, the consequences for baby could be grave. If it's not picked up in time and mom gets to deep depression where they become psychotic, they could definitely harm themselves and harm the baby.
And if they are alone and there is no support, then
it's definitely worse.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, without a doubt.
Okay. So, I got another question. They say, please ask the doctor, how do we identify if the mother is going through this? Because some people don't like to talk. And what do I help or report such a person before it gets worse? And then the second question is, because of the situation, is it post or is there a prenatal?
Okay, let's break that up. The first part of the question wants to know how would I recognize it and how would I report it?
If the person is like those personalities that are very withdrawn or to themselves.
Almost introverted?
Yes.
Yes, well, obviously, again, by having a high index of suspicion, because you would know the person. That would be your friend or your cousin or your sister.
Or your partner.
Or your partner. And, you know, you'd obviously realize that this person is crying more than usual, feeling down.
Like me, I don't cry. I don't like crying in front of people. So okay. I would cry by myself without nobody seeing me cry. So if it's that type of case where the person like does not like showing signs of weakness.
Well, there are other symptoms and signs that one could pick up on. The person is struggling to sleep or sleeping too much.
Okay.
Eating too much, comfort eating or not eating, having no appetite, starting to lose weight. Generally feeling down, you know, not smiling, you know, not happy. You can pick up when someone's generally, especially
the
mood, if you're
the energy is just down.
Energy is down, mood is down, and you know, those are obviously some of the symptoms that we need to look at. And you know, if it becomes a concern to you, obviously speak to your local doctor, general practitioner, or even call a hotline where you'll have a trained counselor that could guide you.
Okay.
It doesn't only have to be the patient. You as a concerned relative could also call a hotline number and, you know, express your fears and be guided from there.
How to go about helping the mom. Okay. And then the second question is, if the mom has those negative feelings, is there a post and then is there a pre?
Yes. You do get prenatal or intranatal depression where, especially if it's an unwanted pregnancy, unplanned pregnancy, young pregnancies where you have all this fear and all this apprehension.
And the family is probably not happy.
Family is not happy. Mom's not speaking to you. Dad's not speaking to you. You're alone.
Worst.
You get kicked out of the house because you was 18 and you were 16 and you felt pregnant.
Like now, you know, the stats of young kids who are pregnant.
So, I mean, you can imagine that would be daunting for anyone.
Yeah, and society is not.
You're 16 years old. You've got kicked out of home, you know, because mom and dad are not accepting of the fact that you, you know, are a teenager and you're pregnant, and you have nowhere to go to. You're pretty much left to your own devices. That on its own would definitely push someone into depression. So you have all this apprehension. You have a baby on the way. You have no finances. How are you going to see to this child? Your boyfriend's a teenager himself. He's not working. You know, so that could be daunting for anyone.
It's traumatic.
It's very traumatic.
Now that you're saying that, I'm reminded of when Oprah was pregnant, when she was in her teens, and she also went through the same thing. Obviously, she wanted to hide it from her dad. Her mom found out, and then she sent her to her dad, and the dad was like, "There's no child of mine that's going to be pregnant out of wedlock and at an early age." And she says that she didn't feel a connection with her child because she spent literally most of the pregnancy trying to hide it, and at some point she like would harm herself, like try to, I don't know, get the baby not to survive, which the baby didn't survive. So what are the chances that if you're going through that in early pregnancy, you're going all through all of those motions where your family's not happy with you, and you're trying to figure out, what is my life going to be like? How, what are the chances of you not, you know, having a connection with the baby while it's still in your tummy? Because I think that is the process of bonding between mom and baby.
Yes, that's actually very, very evident when there are all of these psychological issues.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually very difficult for mom to bond with the baby. Sometimes mom actually blames the baby for the situation that she finds herself in.
That's so sad.
Yes, baby is born, baby is a week old. You are no longer in your parental home. Your boyfriend's run away. He doesn't have anything to do with you. You're living with an aunt who treats you badly, or grandma who's a pensioner who can't really help you.
Yeah.
And so the personal set of circumstances that you find yourself in is obviously, you know, very difficult. And a lot of young moms don't know how to deal with it. They actually blame the baby. Because of you, I'm in the situation.
Yeah.
And that obviously leads to a limited bond or lack of bond between mother and child.
That is a very like sad case. But it's just that classic case of hurting people, hurting other people in the cycle, dominoes effect. Okay. Yes. I have another question, and this person is saying, how do they know what postnatal stress is?
How do you know what postnatal stress is?
Yeah.
Well, it's a symptom cluster. It's a cluster of symptoms which are suggestive of depression. And as we've alluded to earlier, it would be feeling down, feeling anxious, having crying spells, a lack of sleep, which we call insomnia, too much sleep, losing your appetite or eating too much, which we call comfort eating, inability to concentrate at work, at school, and anhedonia, meaning you don't feel like doing anything. You don't feel like getting up. You don't feel like going to work. You don't feel like going to school. Your outlook on life is very bleak.
Yeah.
Those are usually the main symptoms that we look at.
So is there like an instance where, okay, obviously now this is 3 months after you've given birth and now you have to go back to work and you probably have postnatal depression. What are the chances of people losing their jobs because of the condition and the employers just don't understand it? Or let's say maybe they're not diagnosed and they themselves are not aware that, you know, I have postnatal depression. They just think it's probably normal after giving birth to feel like this because you don't look the same. Your body has changed. You've gone through a lot of emotional stuff from during the course of pregnancy, because I am assuming like there's a lot of changes that happen in women. So what are the chances that you could either, you know, lose your job and start not being a functional member of society?
That's a very, very good question. I don't think it's actually been looked at. But certainly if you have lingering depression that has not been addressed and not treated, and you carry that over into the workplace, it may affect your performance and functioning, you know, in the workplace, which could lead to mistakes and could indeed lead to you losing your job. You know, so obviously the consequences of depression are far-reaching.
Yeah. Besides ending your life, there's a lot of other stuff that I think, you know, could be affected by it. But I have another question that says, how do you prevent getting addicted to your PD? It's not PDP. You see, I'm not the only one who makes that mistake. PPD medication.
Well, depending on the severity of the case, your doctor will decide whether. Usually, we have you on antidepressants for at least 4 to 6 months for there to be a tangible change in your mood and in your psyche. But doctors would advise you, listen, we're going to put you on a 6-month course of treatment. After 6 months, we will reassess where we are. Would it be necessary to put you on treatment for a further 3 months? Further 6 months will depend on how you've responded to medication.
Okay.
But certainly it's not something that we'd want to use long term.
But what are the likelihood that now I'm so dependent on them? Like, I don't think I can, even if you say after the 3 months or 6 months period that you've placed me on the medication is over and you're like, you don't need them anymore. But I feel like I'm scared, firstly, that I'll relapse and go back to, you know, those negative feelings. And I'm like, no, I need more.
Well, it depends on the medication you use.
I mean, yeah.
If you're using things that have a high addictive potential, like benzodiazepines,
yeah.
Once you withdraw it, you feel like you're not coping well without them.
Mm-hmm.
And that obviously leads to addiction. But medications like the ones we mentioned earlier, like sertraline and paroxetine, which are your SSRIs, do not have an addictive potential. So as a doctor, we usually wean you off the treatment slowly. And you usually do well on that. You know, most people would not want to be on treatment daily. And
yeah.
I think if with adequate counseling and, you know, debriefing from your doctor through the weaning process, most people do well coming off the medication and functioning normally without medication thereafter.
Okay, what is the weaning process?
Well, often we don't go cold turkey, meaning
No medication, you're done.
If your last day of treatment was the 31st of August, you stop there. 1st of September, nothing.
Yeah.
That doesn't usually work well. So what we do is, by what I mean by weaning process, instead of taking it every morning, you now start taking it every second morning for another 2 weeks.
Okay.
And then every third morning for another 2 weeks, which would then basically bring you down to once a week.
Mm-hmm.
And then thereafter leave it. So you're decreasing your dosage slowly.
Okay, okay.
And people usually cope better with that.
Okay, makes sense. All right, I think that is it from my side. And I don't have any questions anymore from our listeners. So I just wanted to say thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to, you know, come through and have this conversation with me. I think and I hope this is not the first, this is not the last, but the first of many, you know, interviews that we'll have here, because I personally have a lot of, you know, medically related stuff and emotional and trauma, et cetera, related things that I think would make of great topic. So thank you so much for your time. I hope this is not the last time we see you here, and hopefully you can become our resident doctor, you know, hashtag ask Dr. Khan anything.
Yeah, I would like that. There's definitely and it's only a pleasure to be here, and there's also a sense of satisfaction in empowering people.
Yeah.
So when you impart all the knowledge you have from all the years of studying
and you share it with others.
And you share it with others and you help uplift other people, of course, mm-hmm. that in itself is an achievement. So, I would be honored to do that. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you so much. That's how we wrap up our conversation with Dr. Khan. I hope you guys did enjoy it. If you have any other question, well, he's leaving now, so I don't know how we'll work it out. But fret not, he will be our resident doctor. And this is Adele with Someone Like You.
Lift FM, your Kasi, your Stasi.